Would you join me in your Bibles in 1 Peter chapter 2? At our house, we have a nighttime routine to put the kids to bed. It usually starts around 7:30, and it starts with a bedtime story, and then a prayer, and then a song. And then we kind of tag team, because we have three kids, we have one more on the way, but there's too many for just the two of us. So Melissa will take the baby. Owen can kind of go on his own, and I take Sierra. But we basically do the same thing. We take them into their room, we lay them down in bed, we tuck them in, we give them a hug and a kiss, turn off the light, close the door, and walk out. Well, every single night, I would say, almost without fail, one or more of those children will then get out of bed and get a toy. And they think they're being sneaky, but they pick up the noisiest toy in the room and they take it back to their bed where they still play. And we hear it plain as day, but we let it go on for a little bit of time until it's been too long. We'll go back in the room, we'll take the toy, we'll close the door, we'll go into the hallway, and then we laugh and laugh and laugh because we remember being kids. And we remember trying to sneak stuff after bedtime. And it really is human nature to defy authority. Not just as a kid, but even as an adult. It's human tendency to rebel against the rules because people in general don't like being told what to do. Here in America, we fought a revolutionary war back in 1776, solidifying your right to choose your decisions for your own life. And so in America, we like the idea of being free. And it's a natural urge, it's a natural tendency to resist that authority. But if it's one thing we learn from the Bible, it's that human nature and godly nature are often two very different things. In Isaiah 55, it says, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord." In the Message paraphrase of the Bible, it says, "I don't think the way you think, and the way you work isn't the way I work, says the Lord." It is a natural part of the human condition to try and get away with stuff, to try and defy outside authority. And it's kind of a paradox because how we treat other people, how we treat that authority actually helps define our character. Have you ever met a person who seems to brag about getting away with something or sticking it to the man or talking about how at work they didn't do what their boss told them to do and they're bragging about some story about how they told their boss the way it was going to go? And then remember how you thought of that person and their character. It was Dwight L. Moody who said, "Character is who you are in the dark." And I think we could probably all agree that we live, spiritually speaking, in a very dark world. And so the question becomes, what do Christians do? What do we do in a world where there's less and less incentive to do right, especially when that same world is filled with governments and people and laws and systems that are just bent on persecuting the church? How are we as believers called to respond to that kind of authority? Well, that's what Peter deals with as we come into our passage this morning. It's the idea of Christian character. It's how we behave in the darkness of the world. How believers treat all people, but specifically authority in that world. How do we deal with authority that's persecuting the church? How do we respond? And I have to say that it often comes as a surprise to a lot of people to hear the Bible calls us to submit to that authority. It says to respect that authority. And it's surprising because, as I mentioned, the human nature is to defy authority, to resist authority, especially when we don't agree with what that authority is saying, when we don't like what we're hearing. It's like the person telling us to do something is telling us to do what it is we don't want to hear, we don't like them to begin with, and so the natural reaction is to try and defy. Add to that the fact that we're living in a time, culturally speaking, right now, where it's more and more popular to defy authority, and it can be very confusing for a believer to know what to do. Now, don't misunderstand anything from this morning to mean it's wrong to have a voice. That's not what we're saying. It's not wrong to have a voice. It's not wrong to disagree. And in a democracy like we live, you are actually called to have a voice. You are called to speak your opinion. You are called to get involved. But the problem comes when believers and other people use that platform to undermine the authority of the land. And that's what Peter deals with this morning in 2 Peter or 1 Peter chapter 2. Notice what he says in verse 13. Be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether it be to the emperor as supreme or to governors as sent by him to punish those who do evil and to praise those who do good. For this is the will of God, that by doing good you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people. Live as people who are free, not using your freedom as a cover-up for evil, but living as servants of God. Honor everyone, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the emperor. I learned a long time ago that if you want to put somebody on guard, you want to raise the little hairs on the back of their neck, bring up the idea of submission. Because in today's world, it's actually become kind of this offensive idea. If you ask the average person on the street what they think of when you say the word submit, and they'll probably tell you something along the lines of losing your freedom, going into bondage, surrendering your will, and it carries with it this kind of derogatory nature. But you should know that that's not at all how the people of Peter's day understood that word. Because the word he uses here literally means to arrange your own life under the authority or under the leadership of someone else. And if you wanted to get real technical, what you would say is it was often used in the military. It was a term used to describe the relationship of a subordinate soldier to a commanding officer, somebody who has arranged their life under the leadership of someone else. And so this isn't a word that implies weakness, but rather a word that draws on strength and what you do with that strength and what you do with that life. When Jesus said in the Beatitudes, blessed are the meek, that's exactly what he was talking about. Blessed are the people who take the will of their life and surrender it to the Lord. And so this isn't an act of losing freedom. This is an act of using your freedom, making a choice to follow someone else and choosing who that would be. Notice Peter even says in verse 16, live as people who are free, not using your freedom as a cover-up for evil, but living as servants of God. You see, submission is an attitude of the heart. It's not just an action. It's not just blind obedience. I can obey what you tell me to do and resent you for telling me to do it. That's not submission. That's just obedience. Submission is more. Submission is action, but it's also an attitude of the heart. It's an act of your free will to come under the leadership of somebody else. And more importantly than that, it's a reflection of the character of Christ. Because you remember, he submitted to the will of the Father. He said in John chapter 6, I've come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. And so Peter explains here that as followers of Jesus, one of the things we do is to submit, to arrange our lives under the authority of the people put in leadership. And he goes on to explain why in verse 15. He says, for this is the will of God, that by doing good, by arranging your life under the leadership of other people, by doing good, he says, you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people. Now, you might already know this, but there are people in this world today that believe the church thinks it's above the law. It's a criticism of the Christian church. People will say, well, the church wants special attention and special privileges, and they don't want to pay their fair share in taxes, and they think they're better than everyone else. And you should also know that's not new. That's been around since the church was created. That happens now, but that happened during Peter's time as well. You remember the time that Jesus was riding on the donkey into the city of Jerusalem. We call it Palm Sunday. They called it the triumphal entry. But he was riding on a donkey into the city, and the people on either side were laying down palm branches as he rode over top. A week later, he would be crucified, but that's how they received him. Often people don't think much of that, but that was the greeting of a returning conqueror. It's typically how generals were received. After they had gone off and fought a campaign and conquered something, they were received as a conquering hero and they would walk over those palm branches. And that's because the people thought Jesus was that. They thought that he was going to raise up an army and he was going to overthrow Rome. And when he started saying things like, "My kingdom is not of this world," it threw them for a loop because they thought he was there to lead an insurrection. They thought he was there to lead a revolt and a rebellion, and then he didn't. The Pharisees thought that's what he was going to do because when they went to arrest him, they knew they couldn't do it during the day because they feared his followers would riot. It says in Matthew 26, the chief priests plotted together in order to arrest Jesus by stealth and kill him. But they said, "Not during the feast, lest there be an uproar among the people." And so the people thought he was there to overthrow Rome. The Pharisees thought he was there to overthrow Rome. His own disciples thought he was there to overthrow Rome. And so throughout church history, people have thought that believers are there to defy the civil government and to get rid of local authorities. And to be honest, there have been groups in the history of the church who have hijacked the name of Christ and hijacked the Bible and hijacked the institution of the church to justify war and killing and insurrection. But nowhere in the scripture are we told to rebel against authority. To the contrary, we're called to respect authority, to submit to authority. It says in Proverbs 17, an evil man seeks only rebellion. And so here in verse 13, Peter says, "Be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution." Verse 15, "For this is the will of God, that by doing that, you will put to silence the ignorance of foolish people." All those people who say you're there to just usurp the authority of others will be silenced. One of the best ways I've ever found to silence a critic is to stop giving them ammunition. To stop giving them things to say about you. And so when they expect to see believers defy authority, and you come along and you say, no, that's not what we're about. We're here to support the authority and submit to the authority like everyone else. Eventually, they run out of things to say. And it happens even faster when it's an authority you don't like, that you don't agree with, that's telling you something that in your heart you wouldn't go along with. When I worked in the window and door industry, the EPA came out with new regulations that said every house built before 1978 had to be tested for lead paint. And if it was tested and came out positive anywhere in the area that we were working, we had to put up these plastic shields and these plastic tents. We had to wear hazmat suits and bring in HEPA filters, special bags, special procedures. It cost us thousands and thousands of dollars to do it. It lowered our profit margin. It annoyed the customers. And there were a lot of companies that said, "We're not gonna. There's nothing you can do to make us go through that. It will cost us too much. It's not worth it." But the business I worked for was actually owned by a Christian. And he said, "We don't like it. It will cost us a lot of money. It will be inconvenient. It does annoy people. But it's the law of the land." And he said, "It's our duty to do it the best we can." You see, submitting to leaders is easy when we like them. But what about when there are people we don't like? What about when there are rules that we don't agree with, when it costs us something, when there's no real incentive to do right? You remember what Jesus said in Matthew 5, "If you love those who love you, what reward is there in that? Do not even the tax collectors do the same?" You see, there's no reward in doing what's easy. There's no reward in doing what unbelievers do anyway. There's no reward in just going with the flow of the world. On the other hand, when we take the high road, when we demonstrate that unwavering character of Christ, when we do what no one else is willing to do, when we go against human nature and put on godly nature, that stands out. That shines a light in the darkness of the darkest world. And that's why Peter says we submit, because it shows the rest of the world the nature of Christ lived out in the life of a believer. Second, he tells us to whom we submit. Notice he says in verse 13, be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution. To every human institution. He doesn't say just the ones that are popular, the ones that are agreeable, or the ones that are the current trend, but rather he says every human institution. Now, before we cringe at that too badly, consider this. When Peter wrote those words, Rome was under the rule of an emperor or a Caesar named Nero. Nero was one of the worst emperors Rome had or would ever see. He came into power around 54 AD, and when he did, he was actually very popular. All the people loved him. He gave great speeches. But then as soon as he got into office, he started doing some very weird things, one of which was demanding that he be worshipped as God. And so he created this law and enforced it, that in order for a person to worship their God, they had to first worship him as God, get a certificate for that, pay a tax, and then they could do whatever they want. But Nero came first. And then he started spending money, and a lot of money, lavish things, things they couldn't afford, drove the empire near to bankruptcy. Well, around 64 or so, there was a coup. And they tried to depose him from office, but to distract attention from him, he set the city on fire. And he destroyed most of it, killed thousands and thousands of people. Most historians and theologians and scholars say it was Nero, but nobody's quite sure because he blamed the church. And he said it's those Christians. They're here to overthrow Rome. That's always been what they've wanted to do. And here they've done it. They've set fire. And because of that specific accusation, the Apostle Peter and Paul and many, many others will be put to death. Well, that doesn't last very long. In 68 AD, 14 years after coming to power, the military rebels. They drive him out of the city and he commits suicide. You would think that would be the end of the story, but it wasn't. Because believers were so convinced this guy was so evil that he was the one coming back as the Antichrist prophesied in Revelation. There were some that even went so far as to connect the name Nero to the number 666. And it's this emperor, it's this man that Peter has in mind in verse 13 where he says, submit for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether it be to the emperor as supreme or to the governors that he sends. He says, even the likes of Nero deserves our respect. Proverbs 24 says, my son, fear the Lord and the king and do not join with those who do otherwise. You remember the time that Jesus was asked about paying taxes? And they said, what do you say, Jesus? Is it lawful for us to pay taxes to Caesar or not? He pulls out a coin and he says, who's on this coin? And they said, it's Caesar. He said, well, then give Caesar what's Caesar's and give God what's God's. And he said that knowing it would be Rome, knowing that it would be Pontius Pilate that would put him on the cross. He even tells Pontius Pilate later in John 19, you would have no authority over me at all unless it was given to you from above. And so Jesus knows what's going to happen. He knows what Rome will do to him. And yet he still says, give to them what's theirs. Respect that authority. Submit to their leadership. But there are limits to submission. It's not a blanket statement. And a good way to know when submission stops is to see when sin begins. If your submission will cause you to sin, that's the boundary. We don't go any farther than that. In World War II, after Nazi Germany surrendered, there was a huge trial in Nuremberg, Germany. You might remember hearing about it from history. But the Allied powers put on trial the Nazis, the officers, those who were guilty of war crimes and atrocities, and the millions of deaths, 40 million people who died during World War II. And they were put on trial for these things. And a lot of them came up with the defense that said, we were just submitting. We were just doing what our commanders told us to do. And in every single case, the jury always came back and said, submission does not justify criminal behavior. Well, neither does submission justify sinful behavior. When sin starts, submission stops. Paul says in Galatians 6, for each one will have to bear his own load. Let the one who is taught the word share all good things. Submission stops where sin begins. Peter dealt with that personally. You remember he was arrested for preaching in the book of Acts. The Pharisees locked him up, threw him in jail. They hated his message. And they only let him out after they ordered him to never preach again. And he said in Acts chapter 5, we must obey God rather than men. And so submission is not a license to be sinful, nor is it an excuse to be sinful. Neither is it an excuse to be uninvolved. And I hear people say this from time to time. They don't get involved because they just want to do whatever it is the leadership tells them to do. But that's not what submission means. It does not mean you don't have a voice. It doesn't mean we don't affect change where change is needed. What it means is that when we do those things, we do it within the boundaries of the law. One of the reasons Dr. Martin Luther King's march and his cause and his effect in the civil rights movement was so effective was because everything he did was in the boundary of the law. When they marched, it was legal. It was peaceful. When they defied injustice, it was legal and it was peaceful. And you could go so far as to say that in a society that calls us to civic involvement, where it tells us that we're responsible to vote and where we're responsible to be involved and to understand what's going on, that simply sitting on the sidelines is actually the opposite of submission, because our leaders have said we have a civil duty to be a part of this society, to be a part of this world, to use our voice. And so Peter tells us to whom we submit. He says every human institution, those we like, those we don't like, those we agree with, those we don't agree with, but it only goes to the point of sin. Once it crosses that threshold, we don't go any farther. Third, he tells us how we submit. Notice what he says in verse 17. Honor everyone, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the emperor. You see the word honor. You know, another way that could be translated is respect. And so you could read this verse to say respect everyone. And then at the end, notice he even says respect the emperor. Respect everyone and respect the emperor. And it's this idea that everyone deserves a certain level of respect. Every single person is created in the image of God. Every single person is one Christ would die for and did die for. And so every single person is deserving of some respect, regardless of their status in society. All the way from the emperor on down to the lowly pauper, every person deserves respect. But the truth is, that's not always the easiest to do, especially when it's a person that we would feel is unworthy of respect. When I was in law enforcement, part of the time I worked as a corrections officer at our county jail. Our jail had a contract with the federal government to house not only our local and state prisoners, but we also housed prisoners of the U.S. Marshals Service and immigration and the FBI, very high-level prisoners. And so we had people all the way down here who were there because they didn't pay a parking ticket, all the way up to those who were wanted and accused and sometimes already convicted of murder and sexual crimes and the most heinous crimes you can imagine. But the law said, regardless of who they were, regardless of what they had done, every single one of those inmates was entitled to nutritional meals. They were entitled to legal representation, to medical assistance, to news, to mail, to meet with their lawyer, outdoor recreation, and the list went on and on and on. In the U.S., we have a term for that. It's called freedom from cruel and unusual punishment, and it's in our Constitution. And when that was written, it made America stand out as a kind of beacon of light. Because in the world at that time, and in many parts of the world even today, torture was considered normal when it came to the judicial process. And here comes the founding fathers, and here comes America saying, no. No matter who you are and what you're accused of doing, you will receive a basic level of respect. And as believers, as ambassadors for Jesus, when you do that for others, when you honor people, especially those who might not deserve it, that makes you stand out. That makes you different. That makes your light shine into the world. People see that unwavering character and they notice. Paul said in Romans 13, pay to all what is owed to them. Taxes to whom taxes are owed. Revenue to whom revenue is owed. Respect to whom respect is owed. Honor to whom honor is owed. And right here, Peter says everyone is owed to some. He says honor or respect everyone. All the way from the average person walking the street up to the emperor himself. Everyone gets the same level of inherent respect. But then notice what else he says in verse 17. He says, love the brotherhood. Then he says, fear God. And what we see is a change. And it goes from a passive submission to an active love. And what I mean by that is showing respect to somebody really doesn't cost you anything. It doesn't take you out of your way to treat a person like a person. One person said one time, it doesn't cost anything to be a decent human being. But love, on the other hand, well, that's different, especially the agape love that Peter mentions here. That takes effort, that takes work, that takes sacrifice. This past week, I was preparing to do a review for our Bible college class. And the way we do the reviews is we take the final exam and we review that information because this coming week is the final. And so I came into my office a little bit early that day, and I thought, well, I'll get ready, and I'll have a good review, and they'll be prepared. And I found out that I had lost every single one of our finals. And as neat as that may seem, and at first the class thought it was great that we lost the finals, what we realized very quickly is that we can't do a review of the final if we don't have the final, and so I need one. And I'm scrambling, and I'm looking, and I can't find it. Finally, I called the teacher of the other class, and I said, look, this is where I'm at. He was on his way home from work, and he said without hesitation, do you want me to swing by the church and give you one that you can copy? I said, you will save my bacon. Thank you so much. And he did. He went out of his way to make a special effort to help out a brother in Christ. And that's exactly what Peter's talking about here. It's that type of agape love, that sacrificial love that goes out of the way to help someone else. He says, respect all people, but we have a love for believers. We love the brotherhood. And most importantly, he says, to fear God. In other words, love the brotherhood, but keep the highest place of honor in your heart, the highest place of reverence in your life. That goes to Jesus Christ. In Matthew 10, Jesus said, do not be fearful of those who kill the body but can't kill the soul. Rather, fear or have the highest level of reverence for him who can destroy both. So when it comes to respecting authority, when it comes to submission in our life, we have our why. Why do we do it? Because it shows the world the nature of Christ, who himself submitted to the will of his Father. It tells us who to submit. Peter says, every human institution. It tells us how we submit. We treat everyone with a certain level of respect, of dignity, of honor. We love the church. We have reverence for the Lord. And finally, as we close, he tells us when. When do we submit? Verse 13, be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution. Do you see the very first word, be? It doesn't say sometimes be subject. It doesn't say do it once. It doesn't say when it's convenient. It doesn't say when it is profitable, but rather be subject. In other words, this is an ongoing action. This never stops. It doesn't matter what's going on in the world. We respect the authorities that God's put in place. You see, we have an immovable God. As I mentioned before, he's the God that said, I change not. We have the same Savior that Peter said is the same yesterday, today, and forever. We have an immovable God. And in that immovable God, we place an unshakable faith. It's a faith that can't be budged. No matter what happens to us in this life, no matter what the world sends our way, we can't be moved from that position. And that type of faith will have fruit. It will affect your life. It will change how you live. And one of the biggest things that it will do is produce an unwavering character.